go.
All right, Rob Bertha.
Right on.
Hey, everybody. 1 second. I'm just going to straighten this up. Hey everybody, GVB Mind Warrior here, talking to the wonderful mate of mine, Robert Vadaz. Robbie has just won the NRL Bianca Cup Metallic Sight Division, which is a phenomenal thing. It's a massive achievement for Robbie, especially shooting against USAMU and some of the top international shooters that come to this event. So welcome, Robbie.
Thanks, buddy.
I want to talk to you quickly about mental health stuff. Now, I know you work with the Border Patrol. You do a lot of stuff for them. Now, give me some insights into your background before you even got that far. So you told me some stuff about your life.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born and raised in the Tampa, Florida area, middle to lower middle class, you know, rural family, hard working. My dad was in construction, still is in construction. My mother suffered from mental health issues, you know, without a doubt. And at a young age, you don't really realize that, you know, your norm is just what you know. When I was 11. You know, she committed suicide in a fairly public way, involving the family, and it was a dramatic deal. Obviously, it was very traumatic for me as a son. Period. You know, but to add on to that, you know, I grew up with firearms. My dad was an avid shooter, and he was a big bore handgun guy. He loved his 44 Magnums, and we reloaded, and we shot, we hunted, and we did all sorts of things. Like that, so I was very knowledgeable about guns early on, you know, the day before, you know, she chose to take that path, she came to me to load a gun for her, which was the gun she used, to take her life. So it was heavy in several different layers, yeah. You know, not just your normal losing a mother layer and being confused as to why someone make those choices, but then on top of that, you know, you start blaming yourself. Could it even have happened if I had not, you know, had, you know, done that? Not that you can control it as a child, you know. Mm-hmm. But so growing up through that was difficult. I have an older sister, 3 years older than me. Also, you know, devastated by that.
How did she take it compared to you? I'm just going to shut this door for a second.
Yep.
So what did your sister compare to yourself, like her age difference to you?
Yeah, so she's 3 years older than me. So obviously she was into her, you know, teen years, and I was younger. And it affected us both very differently. Similarly at that time, but I immediately came to the support of my father, I think, who was devastated by it. The precursor to the entire thing happening was as my mother suffered from mental health issues, the family suffered, and it became violent in the home from my mother, and my father knew, and it was mainly directed towards my father, you know, sometimes towards us, but it was directed towards my father. And so my dad was able to say, you know what, I need to just remove myself from this situation. And he said, okay, I'm going to move to a friend's house who has a little side apartment literally hundreds of yards down the road, you know. But that was the you know, the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, and then she chose to take her path. But so I chose with the only thing that I knew, which was to support my father and to fall in that family unit, you know. And my sister didn't take that. You know, she took the loss of her mother as it's a life defining event, no matter what.
Of course.
But she chose, I think, to take it as a life anchoring event and something that everything hinges on, you know, instead of having a piece of a chip of the rock in your life, you know, so to speak. If you know, if your life's a sculpture and then one chunk comes off at a time for different reasons, you have to be able to say, okay, that was a good chunk or a bad chunk, and
yeah,
how to move past it. And
it became the whole thing for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And still to this day, you know, I'm 44 years old, which means she's 47 years old, and it's still something that has its hooks, you know, in her, in a negative way. So I was able, I think, to, you know, I went through all the confusion stuff, and, you know, you go through asking God all the questions and the world all the questions and wondering all the answers. But I think eventually through life I was able to see it in a positive light. It's never a positive event.
Of course.
But, you know, what I've learned is that if you can't change it, you have to take something from it. And I was able to, you know, what we learn and as first responders or in law enforcement or as in the military later on, you know, if you lose, period, don't lose the lesson. That you hear people say that in different ways. And I've always taken that to heart. So that lesson for me, you know, taking advantage of every single day. And, you know, my father, devastated by it through that time period. You know, he was a farm kid, a hardworking guy, you know, and he hinged all of his success on how the family is. And that just really, he carried all that blame and still does to this day to an extent.
Has he been able to move on at all?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he remarried. My stepmother, Marianne, who I consider my mom for all their purposes, and she's been phenomenal. She's great for him and in his life, and great for me and in my life. She's a great grandmother to my children, you know, so she's phenomenal. And he has, but there's still that part, mainly because I think the devastation that it had on my sister and the lasting effects for her lifestyle choices and other things like that we still see.
And has your sister sought help? Like, has she ever gone and said, you know, I need help with this? Or has she suffered with this in silence and just thought she's going to deal with it and that's just her?
It's never in silence. It's always a refusal.
Right.
You know, and at a young age, help was sought for her. And people continue to say, hey, listen, you know, although you're functioning in this capacity, right, but it's clearly unhealthy. These parts of your life are unhealthy, and we know this. So you need help here, you know, and she is not able to hear that, which I'm, you know, sad about. I have very little contact with my sister overall because there's a point. The phone's always there. If it rings, I pick it up without a doubt. I send a birthday text and, you know, happy birthday to my niece and things like that. But, you know, what gets very troubling is when that negative impact that it has on an individual is all that they live, breathe, and eat.
Yeah.
And then I'm raising two sons and I'm caring for my wife and I'm trying to, if at all possible, you know, not let that become a cycle.
Yeah.
You know, there's that, I always say, is a fine balance between if you're happy with who you are as an adult or as a grown up, not even an adult, right?
Yeah.
If you're happy with who you are, part of that sometimes comes from adversity, pain and suffering and how you come through it. I'm really happy with who I am as a person right now.
And you see a lot. I mean, you know, you're part of the Border Patrol. You guys do a lot of stuff. And you see a lot of stuff, and you're in a specialized unit of that. So, you know, there's things you'd obviously see and go through that would affect you.
Absolutely. And your friends go through it. And so I think I've learned how to deal with that stress really well in my life. So I want my sons to come to the same place, although I don't want them to have to feel the same pain to get there.
That's right.
So it's a really weird, you know, idea to try and get them mentally healthy and happy and, you know, prosperous, but not to have to go through the adversity.
I like the word you just used then, because I use a different word for most people. People talk about success. I hate the word success because people always associate it with money. I call it fulfillment.
Absolutely.
Because you're after, and you're saying prosperous, and it's not in a financial state. It's about them doing well, being well, achieving, you know, for themselves and for their family. You know, it's a different, it's not a monetary drive. It's just what they do makes them a better person and enjoy their life.
It's touching happiness too. Like, that, for my idea, like you said, being fulfilled and being prosperous, and I agree, success is, I think, a terrible word, you know, because there's so many, it's such a gray area, so many varying levels of success. Like, take this match, for instance, you know, I just had the ultimate level of success in a mindset of win or loss, you know, or black or white, but...
The funny thing about that, because of the person you are, I feel a lot of joy for the fact you won, and it's good, and it's I wouldn't have the same for everybody, but because I like you as a guy, and I know you're a giving person, we really appreciate the fact you won. And so we're really happy for you. So when we see someone we care about win, it gives us a good feeling too. So it rubs off all down the chain, you know, it's good.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I have nothing but like great. I think Mark Hastings said one time, he's like, you know what? You're the people's champion.
Yeah.
Like after I won 1 year or something like that. And that meant more to me than winning.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm coming from my background again, it's all about what my peers think of me, what my guys think of me. I truly believe in the Border Patrol mission and the mindset, the history, and I've just wanted to put my name in the book, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a legendary list of guys, doesn't matter if they were paid the least or the most, you know, I want to be on that list.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully people can see that success, like you said, terrible word, but any sort of gains, you can find happiness in these weird little moments. And traveling the world and meeting people, you see that it could be just the joy of growing a tomato.
Well, Jim Rohn said it years ago, he was a speaker for many years ago, he said, you know, if you sell up everything you own, you go live with the squirrels, because that makes you happy, so you're a success.
Absolutely.
He said, that's what you want to do, and you're doing it, you're successful. You know, it's got nothing to do with making tons of coin. And it's and one thing interesting for me, because I've been through ups and lows of life. I've been to the end of almost ending my life, and I had a mate take his life on my birthday at the same day I was thinking of doing it myself. And I came back from that ragingly, and when I came back to the 2014 shooting championships, I'd just gone through all that, and I was working really hard and shooting pretty well, and I was coming back, and you know, and 2016 I was training to climb Everest because someone threw it out to me, saying, "Hey, what are you doing lately?" I said, "Nothing." I said, "You want to climb Everest?" "Yeah, what the hell, let's do it." As you do. And we were in deep training for it, and during training I nearly died of a major stroke. And the interesting part about that, having been told I was worthless as a kid by my teachers, and then feeling worthless, then coming out of that and winning all this stuff I won, and then losing a lot of stuff, then coming back again, and then almost losing my life, then coming back again, then almost losing my life to a stroke. One thing that was interesting that mattered, and this is one thing I want you to take from this, what I've learned, is that I don't care. Nothing that I'd ever won or lost mattered. I've won Academy Awards, I've won world titles, I've won national titles, multiples of everything. Not one thing ever came into my mind. The only thing that matters when my wife and kids to the hospital door and they came in, I went, yes, that's what I'm here for. So I wrote my book, which we're doing this year, comes out because it was written for my kids. It was a book of life lessons. In case one day I didn't come back, I fell off the perch, they had something they could live by as far as the way I thought they should live. You know,
that's awesome.
That's so, yeah, and so what I get from you isn't that you've won. And yeah, you've won some great, and you work hard, and you work hard to shoot hard. I mean, that's what we all strive to be. But, you know, it's the person you are that makes you what you are, not the championships you win. I think that's what Mark was getting at.
Well, you know, I think you're right. I think, you know, there's several of the great people, not even great people, you can even put that, but just people that have a better understanding or maybe a better view or clearer view of the world. Mm-hmm. And they realize that, you know, these little things that are driving you crazy, that you're feeling this little, I don't know, this knife twisting in your body somewhere because it's not getting done, or you need to do this, you need to accomplish that. I've found that in 95% of those moments, they're just unimportant in the big picture of things, you know, and you see those, like my kids grow up, your kids grow up, you see them make those little moments if they're tap dancing or if they're baseball players or, you know, I tell coaches for my son all the time, because he's a good baseball player, and my oldest boy, so he'll get on a new team, and the team won't be doing well. They haven't gelled yet. This hasn't happened. And so, you know, anytime you have an influence on kids, I don't ever speak to the coaches at all, but I'm always watching, you know, just to make sure they're big influences. So and they'll come over and they'll say, "Listen, I just want you guys to know this as parents. They're not always going to lose. It's not always going to be this way." And I've always said the same thing, whether he was 9 years old or now 14 years old. I don't care if he consistently loses until he's 26 years old. I don't care if you lose every single game. This has nothing to do with winning.
Sure.
Losing has nothing to do with winning. The score at the end of it, how you attach or assign your value to it, that's what matters. And so I try to drive in. It's just self-importance or self-respect in the way that I'm getting better every single day.
Yeah.
And if you did something better today than you did it yesterday, you've improved.
Of course.
And as long as you're growing, as long as you're learning, you're always getting better. That means you've never reached your best.
Well, you, and no, I hate the word perfection, because it doesn't exist either.
Doesn't exist.
You know, my bodybuilding journey took 8 years to win. I didn't win a show, place in a show for 3 or 4 years. Nothing. I kept going back to the slapping machine, because I thought, one day, when I was 20, I won. Martial arts was the same. The filmmaking was a 15-year journey of, gee, maybe I'll make it one day, which could never happen. Maybe it'll happen. You don't know. You just got to put your faith in what you do and improve. And I always learned the lessons are in the losses. And if you don't take the lessons out of the losses, it's just a failure and your whole mindset's screwed up.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it's a big thing for people now with mental health and where we are today. I think everyone's so driven about this bullshit success word that we've forgotten what it all is. It's about growth. You know, I put it in my martial arts things. There is no mastery, it's only growth. You take the hits, you fall, you get up, you work. What did I do? Okay, I can do this differently. I'll try it again, bang the hit, hit down again, get back up again, try another way. Eventually you'll work it out.
It's an amazing idea that people try so hard to get to a destination. People say don't speak in cliches, but man, I love cliches because they are the only true descriptors of, I think, what it's supposed to be.
That's why the cliches.
You know, and you know, if you embrace the grind, right? Embrace the suck, they say that in the military. You know, learn to love the grind, they say that in sports. You know, but you're so focused on a destination that you fail to appreciate all these moments.
That's right.
You know, if you're trying to get to
it, takes you there.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
There's a 0.0002%, I made that up completely, of the chance of you making that day.
92.6% of statistics are made up.
That's absolutely right. But you know, there's a great chance you're never going to make that destination.
Yeah.
then that's not the point. The point isn't because if there's a 100% chance that you're going to make it in the major leagues or you're going to be a champion shooter when you started it, then you're nothing but a coward.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're only doing what's safe.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to do something you don't know you can do or not, there's no guarantees in it. And I think that is what this whole side of me growing up and seeing what, number one, the reality of mental health and how real it is for people. Mm. And as clear and as bright as I see this day, no matter how positive my, like today for me, a big day, how positive and clear I know this day is, that's exactly the other side of the spectrum for someone else, how dark and deep of a hole, you know, and how real this is for me, that's so real for them. Like, and that's what I try to remember and remind myself all the time is that, you know, even though my mother made those decisions, she took a path that I don't agree with, that I definitely don't approve of. That I was angry about for a long time and all those things that come with it. But I've come to a place where I really can't fault or give fault. I'm not in that position.
And I disagree with people that say it's a selfish decision, because it's not. A lot of things happen when you're going down that pathway, and having felt it, you go, you know what? It's not because it's selfish. Either there's a lot of pain and you can't shake it, or there's a pathway you need to find and you can't find it. The world's crushing you down and you can't get out. And eventually, it's like, I equate it to being in the corner with like Tyson. He's beating the living shit out of you. And hit by hit by hit, and occasionally you might get one back, but eventually it just pummels you to the ground and it kills you. And I don't think people ever want to die. They just lose the hope for life. And they think the world would be better without them. And they lose. Once you lose your self-worth, you lose your life.
Yeah, definitely. And I've always thought about that as well. I think that at that moment that... this is honestly the longest conversation I've had about this.
Yeah.
Ever.
Appreciate it.
Well, since I was a kid going through some therapy and stuff like that, you know, but I think that personally, be it whether I'm making myself believe it for personal reasons or I'm right, that at that moment that my dad said, okay, this is beyond not healthy, right? I need to separate myself from this so I can care for my family from afar. That in that moment, my mother did not truly believe that she was a healthy thing for the family, that for her children, you know. She left a very short note that said, please forgive me, and that was it. And I truly believe that she lack of selfish reasons removed herself from that situation. I have to believe that that was part of her mindset. And I wish that I was older at the time or could say now, you know, that's not the right decision.
Here's the other thing, it's now... You know, I lost my first friend at 16. I've lost a lot of friends on the way. And my auntie took her life. Same deal, left a note saying, I just need to sleep forever. You know, life is just too painful. And, you know, you get to a point where you have a greater understanding of it. And one of the things that we've learned, we try and teach people, is what general awareness training. We call it GAT training. I don't like the word, but it's to teach people to look for the basic signs. You know when someone suddenly, they've been depressed for 6 months and suddenly they're happy. Or, you know, the little things like give all their belongings away, or they're very reserved, they don't talk anymore, and suddenly they're out of the mix and they just disappear. And people don't ask. And if we just took that second out of our life to do something simple, and I do it now when I speak to everybody, I make them stand up and promise me with their phone in the air, say, you know, this could be a terror or a tool, so let's make it a tool. We're going to make 3 Call Friday. Every Friday afternoon, before you go home from work, you get on your phone and you look through your list and find 3 friends you haven't spoken in a while and you freaking give them a call. I said, because one day it'll be the call that saves a life, and I know because I've done it, and I've saved a mate of mine's life who tried to suicide 3 times.
That's great.
And he's still with us, and we help him out, and he's doing really well now. He's joining Toastmasters, trying to learn to speak, bettering himself. And this is a guy that's a stunt guy, had a great life, and great family. Wife now separated from him, can't see the kids very well. Just bang, 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 you know, losing the house, and no work now. So it's just, it compounds really fast, and becomes this slippery spiral of horrible darkness, you know.
I think the people in those darker spots, too, they become really good, especially in certain professions. They become very good at hiding.
Yeah, masking. Yeah, well, he still works in the middle of his most depressive times. He's working as a stuntman, jumping out of the way of cars. So how easy would it be for him one day just to not jump?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I'm sitting there every day going, oh my God, he's up north, he's doing this stuff. I can't see him. And so we keep on the phone with him all the time. You know,
you say like law enforcement guys or girls, you know, personnel, whatever it is, they literally have a tool with them all the
time.
That's
right, to do it.
Military, you know, you name it, you know, pilots and people that are in that grind. It's the small little things that I've talked to people that say, you know, well, I don't because of this. It's this small little, like I have to pick up the groceries, you know, like, or I have to buy the milk. Like it's something simple a lot of times, but you don't realize that without asking, that they're just going about their day. I think you learn that. I learned that really when it comes to competition.
Yeah.
You know, I see, you know, Doug Koenig and Robbie Latham and all these guys that you think have been there, been everywhere before. There's no way that there's a stressor in their lives. And now I can see physical cues from Robbie. I can see physical cues only after decades of being with them.
Yeah.
Of when people are stressed, and even though they're joking around, you know,
there's a hint of something behind the eyes.
Exactly. And if it's not your wife or your spouse or your kid, you know, like I know when my oldest comes around and he's hiding something, like it's there, and I know right away because we're together all the time.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes with buddies, it's not that way.
So you gotta ask.
So you gotta ask. And I think sometimes even the ones that you're not so deeply rooted with, you know, if I was at all part of that, and I'd love to be, make sure that you're calling people that you really definitely call the ones that you're deeply connected to, mm-hmm. but really try and call some of the ones that you're not so deeply connected to. You know, I made some great connections with people just in the past couple of weeks here. We started talking about some of this stuff, and I say, listen, you can just give me a shout.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
And a guy gives me a hug and he's like, thank you so much.
You just go, wow, he's here.
Yeah.
You know how close they are down the street. And when you've been through a few of them, you know where they're at. I can tell when I speak to a large crowd who's crying at what stage of what I say, and I know exactly where they're at in their mindset.
Sure.
You can pick it, you go, that word triggers that. Yeah. I know where you are. I can tell how far through an issue you are by the way you react to what I say.
It's part of our timeline, too, of where we are in the different cultures, but in all of humanity, you know, people, I think, a long time ago had a lesser value of their own human lives, right? And in some countries, it's still like that.
Yeah.
And now we have, by and large, I think people have a very selfish aspect a lot of times, right? We become very,
self-absorbed.
Absolutely, I was going to say the exact same thing. But at the same time, I think people truly believe they're originals.
Hmm.
And yet people really have to see that there are no such thing as an original. We are copies of copies of copies. This has been going on for, you know, some scientist says a couple hundred million years or whatever it is, and other ones say it's way longer than that. So there's been a whole bunch of me's running around, and whatever problem you're going through, or you feel that you're the only one to ever try and conquer this, climb this mountain, it's been done. It's been failed for sure, but it's been successfully accomplished so many times.
Yeah.
So you know, just finding that out that you're not alone, you're going through.
That's one of the things we've always done with people. Say, just shut your eyes and I said, raise your hand if you've ever felt depressed, you can't get out of bed in the morning, life doesn't feel worth living. You go through it all, and then you say, everyone, open your eyes, and every hand's up. You go, see, you're not alone. You're never alone. There's always someone who's been there going through it or about to go through it you can talk to. And the most important thing is having a network of friends around you can trust who aren't going to judge you.
Yeah.
And I find this is something, and I know you do a lot of peer support work with the Border Patrol. It's that peer-to-peer stuff and knowing you can reach out to someone and go, you know what, I'm not going to get judged. I'm not going to get fired. I'm not going to get... Because I know the military have a hard time with that because they know if they put their name down saying, yeah, I'm struggling, having a hard time, they're going to get flicked out the back door. So that's a tough thing, you know, where they're now trying to instigate help programs for their guys, which is fantastic. I think we've got some great programs at home, but we also have a long way to go with certain aspects of it. And the more you can reach out to your network of friends and that they know where you're at, it helps a lot, you know.
It's the biggest thing in the world. It's, you know, to think about going through life alone is a tremendous burden. It's understandable that people have a hard time, no matter what your mental health level is. You could be the biggest guru of positive thinking in the world, but if you stick him somewhere and all of a sudden there's no one else to listen to his positivity, he's gonna get dark pretty quick. You know, so it's a great thing to help people. It never ceases to amaze me the level of empathy and compassion that human beings still have. You know, not just for each other as a family, but with total strangers, and it's within people.
Yeah, my wife does it all the time. I'll be walking down the road to the city and then she won't be there. And she's seen someone off in the corner, a young girl crying, and she's over there comforting her, saying, are you okay? Can I help you?
Yeah.
And just off the bat. I mean, my kid does the same thing. Mason and May, or May's two little Mason's done the same thing. We're walking through the city. It was my dad's 80th birthday party. Mason had been given $20 for his previous birthday. And we're walking up through the city in the rain, and I turn around, he's gone. He's over giving to a veteran who's sitting on the side of the road undercover and saying, you need it more than me. And he was, 8 years old at the time.
That's great.
And no one told him to do that. And just that little thing, that was one of my proudest days. You know, not the awards that he's won, that's just that this kid actually cared about a human being. And that was what mattered most. So what do you do, just last couple of questions, what do you do for your mental prep and mental health? So two things, life and competition. What do you do? So when you're prepping up for a comp, is there a similarity to what you do in the morning, getting out of bed, going, you know, it's going to be a good day, I'm going to smash it out? Or what, like, what do you do?
I'm a simple, stupid guy. So it's the same for me. It really is.
Repetition works.
Absolutely. And if I try and get in one groove here and then one groove there, one thing I do not do well is preparation. I'm not a preparation guy. It comes from my background. It comes from growing up. It comes from the Border Patrol. It's happening, grip it and rip it, let's go, make it happen, fix it, and then go home. So in competition and in life, I'm similar. You know, I may wake up and go to a match, or I may wake up and remodel the bathroom. Like, it's going to happen the next day. But what I always tell myself is, number one, try and understand the true value of what's going on. You know, when I first started shooting competitively, I always wanted to tell myself, this is not reality. This is not real world. And none of this matters. Because in a month, nobody's going to remember what I do right now. Nothing. It does not matter what level you get to. At some point in time, it's going to be forgotten. You know, it's not going to change the world. What I'm doing right now isn't going to change the world. What I am doing over here with my kids or with my wife or with my family, that impact and the generations that are going to stem from that.
That's right. It's the next step down.
That's going to affect the world. So if I can put a level of value, that a realistic level of value in what I'm doing that day, you have to be able and willing to try and figure it out. And that's one thing that I try and get through my day as well. I do not know how to do this, but I'm going to stick with it. You know, one of my favorite sayings in the world is, how do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time. I truly believe that. That's, you know, you have to be able to start taking chunks out of whatever it is, you know, whether it's get up and take one step, whether it's, you know, in mental health issues, be able to get out of bed one time, you know, make it one more day, do whatever it is. But beyond that, for me, for competition, I have to get out of my own way.
Yeah.
You know, because we are our own worst enemies as individuals. Self-doubt and fear are what holds us back from every accomplishment, no matter what it is. So every day when I wake up is no different for competition. And I say to myself, I have no idea what this day is going to bring me, but I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how I'm going to crush all I have to do in these hours, but I'm going to figure it out. And if I'm not done with it and this suffers because of it, then so be it.
Yeah.
It suffers because of it. If I'm not able to get my practice in, or if I'm not able to get my work done, or what, because I have to get back, kids got to go to baseball and all the things got to happen, then I have to put a true level of value to things, you know, let go of what doesn't matter. What I find competitively is it frees me up immensely. I don't shoot as much as a lot of these guys shoot. I don't pick up a gun from September, except for operational work, from September until April.
Yeah.
Our National Police Shooting Championships for PPC is in September. I put those in the safe, and I don't touch them again until April. And then we shoot about a week a month through the season, and then put them away again. And then it's back to, you know, chasing bad guys and doing the job. But mainly taking kids to baseball and soccer practice.
You're a cheap Uber driver.
That's right. But I think it frees my mind up quite a bit that I can mentally think about what I want to be doing while I'm doing something else. I know I should be practicing right now, or I should be finishing some paperwork or whatever. If I can stay focused on the next thing, you know.
I think a lot of guys, you know, I see a lot of stuff here. And I mean, I haven't shot for 3.5 years at all, and I came back to this event, which is always an interesting event to come to, and watching the amount of guys that changed their training for the Cup. They're down there and they're ripping out rounds thousands at a time all day, and I've never done that at home. They're loading mags differently than they ever did. It's like, what, they change everything they've worked on, which made them good, to make them better for this in the last week.
Right.
And it just brings them unstuck. You're watching everyone sort of, you know. I knew this match was going to be just a mid to low range spiral for me the whole way through, because I went, well, I haven't shot, I'm going to work at where I'm at so I can come back next year. And I learned so much. Every event I learned from, at every event I shot, and I just went, oh, this is good. The glasses I need now because I'm blind. I need to turn them higher up. They need to be this high up. They need to be this. My cadence is out. This is out. And this is what I'll work on as we get back. And knowing that's what you get from the event. And the other thing you said, which was cool, is what I say a very similar thing about how I made it in all the industries I made in, is because I was too dumb, like too stupid and naive to know any different. So my stupidity took me in there, my naivety to keep me going.
Sure.
And by the time I was in there so deep, I thought, well, that's closer than going back. We'll just keep going that way.
Absolutely.
And eventually you get there. But I think people take a lot from that, because I think these days we're getting a lot of people that give it one go, one effort, one time, they mess it up, they stop. And I had a lady at Lego, I spoke to the Lego Corporation a couple of months back, and she said, oh, I've tried four or five times to get this thing working. I said, come and see me when you've done 400. I said, then we'll talk. I said, because until you've got that level of commitment, you're never going to get there.
Sure.
And I think we need to change that way we think.
Well, it's today's world.
Yeah.
You know, we are really short-term gratification-minded right now.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to, you know, realize that there were people that grinded and worked out an entire lifetime for one very small, basic achievement.
Mm.
And it wasn't a gift, and it wasn't a prize, and it wasn't an amount of money. It may have been just making a house, or digging a ditch, or making a car run better because they had to drive it to work the next day.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, going back for me as a kid, you know, I had that father that you know, if the car was broken down, which a lot of people have. I'm not the only one. If the car was broken down the night before, he had to stay up all night long to fix it so he can get the truck,
yeah,
so he can get to work in the morning. You know, because that's how he made money. And that's how he fed his family,
yeah,
you know. So, and it's an amazing thing. And so, what's really great is to be able to come full circle now and see, like, today's good day, a bright day, and to talk to him on the range or from the range, you know, and to feel his joy,
yeah, nice,
you know. So, it's pretty amazing.
Awesome. Big Robbie Vadaz. Robbie is an amazing character and a wonderful guy all around, as you just heard. You get so much out of this video. I have, and I always love talking to Rob because he's such a nice guy. So yeah, take something from this. I guarantee it'll help you a lot in your life. So have a great day, guys. GBB, Robbie Vadaz, we're out.
Thanks, Robbie.
Thanks, Robbie.
Pleasure, man.
Yeah.